Hey, welcome to episode 18 of the Dennis Poulette Show, the podcast where we are creating conversations that will help parents lead and launch their teenagers. Today, we have a very special guest. His name is Brett Ullman. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's got lots of experience helping parents with different topics, and I'm going to let him introduce himself here in a minute, but I am super excited about the conversation that we are having today. It's all about mental health, and I know that this is a big topic, a big issue that many families are dealing with, and so today we wanted to tackle that topic with Brett, and so I'm super pumped that he's here with us on the podcast. I sure hope that you enjoy it. Without further ado, let's get into the interview. Hey everybody, I'm here today with Brett Ullman. Brett is here to talk today about our topic of mental health and anxiety, and I'm going to let him introduce himself, but I am so happy that he is here. Brett, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. I hope you're having a good day. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do, and then we'll just get right into the topic.
Sounds good. My name is Brett Ullman. I was a full-time teacher. I live in the Toronto area, just outside of Toronto in Canada. And I left teaching 15 years ago to be a speaker. And so this is actually what I do for a living. I often just say issues I think we've forgotten to talk about as the church, but I speak on mental health, parenting, how to be a better man, which is a lot of my new stuff, how to be better fathers and better husbands. And then I address I call them the fun topics. How do we talk about sex? How do we talk about pornography and addictions and media? Like, not all media is good, but not all media is bad. How do we have good conversations on that? But so I travel and speak, and with COVID, I'm traveling a lot less, but still doing a lot of digital stuff. Married with two kids. I have a daughter, Zoe, who's in first year university, which is a fascinating thing during COVID. So she's actually in residence, even though all her classes are online. And then I have a grade 12. I have a senior at home. So both my kids are just losing end of high school, beginning of university. And then I'm married to my wife, Dawn, and she's a nurse. And so glad to be here, loving the conversation on mental health, probably the favorite conversation of all of them for me.
Author of the book, Parenting, Navigating Everything. I looked at that book. It's like 7,000 pages long, maybe not quite that long, but it's pretty big, right?
226,000 words.
Okay, that's a lot.
Well, you know what the goal was? The goal was to have one resource for parents. Too often, like even a lot of my friends and people told me, make it into 6 books. And I'm like, people aren't buying 6 books. I mean, I don't think we're great readers today, which I think we should challenge people to do. But I wanted one resource. And so it ended up being a large one. The first 6 chapters looking at, I do a talk called Parenting, Navigating Everything. And if you're from a church that has Right Now Media, you can find that first kind of 6 chapters on a 6-part small group study. But looking at how do we do the right parenting styles? How does rich communication look? How do we spend time with our kids? And then even looking at the discipline. You know, what is discipline? How do we discipline? And I always think discipline should be more about teaching than about punishment. And then the last 10 chapters are everything I speak on. The biggest chapter by far, mental health. You know, how do we as parents deal with this? But the truth is, even how do you and I as adults? Because no matter who's listening, I mean, mental health is a huge conversation today. And then everything from media, I added in a few new things, loneliness, which I think has been really exacerbated during COVID. So a lot of the alienation, loneliness, finances and education, and drugs and alcohol as well. So it's kind of, I always think of it as, remember those choose your own adventure books from a lifetime ago? It's kind of that, you know. Yeah. If you suddenly have a kid with mental health or you're struggling, well, there you go, mental health. If you're a young parent, you got a one-year-old, well, there, begin with some of the, how do you have good, you know, relationships with your kids.
Yeah, it seemed to me like it was a handbook, like a book that you would take down off the shelf whenever you wanted to look up a specific topic and you had a specific question about something. Maybe you wouldn't read it necessarily 100% all the way through, but you would pull down and say, hey, I need help with mental health, so I'm going to look at this chapter this week. So today, that's our topic. We're going to talk about mental health and how we can help our kids through this time. And I was just kind of interested in hearing a little bit about your story and how did you get involved in studying mental health and being a part of the conversation when it comes to all of the stuff that goes with that.
Yeah, for sure. So when I began speaking, I was speaking on media, and there's a book Bill Hybels wrote, and I know Bill Hybels has had another conversation, but his book is still great. His book called Holy Discontent really shaped a lot of what I do in life. And so at that season, numerous kids were approaching me after every talk, talking about self-harm, eating disorders. Now, this was 17, 18 years ago. And so we didn't really address those under the auspice of mental health. We addressed them kind of in each topic. And so I had a talk I put on, it's on YouTube now, called The Wounding Embrace. But everything kind of changed for me. I left teaching. I did a program. So I left teaching 15 years ago. I did a program called the Arrow Leadership Program, which is a 2-year leadership program. You go once a week, and then went straight into a master's degree. I did my master's in leadership and evangelism down at a Wheaton grad school in Chicago. And so suddenly found myself having, like, I'm now an international student. Chicago is a 50-minute flight from me, but I'm an international student. And so I need to make a lot of money to pay for my master's. And so my speaking dates went from 125, which is kind of normal, which is sustainable for me, to 275 to 300, which is fully unsustainable. And my friends, my board of directors, I'm a nonprofit, everyone around me had these little, let's call them interventions, where they'd sit down and say, Brett, you got to slow down. And I just kept saying, if I can just make it to March 1st, 2012, I'll be okay. Because that was the day I'd graduate. And if I could just make it to that day, I could kind of rejig my life back to something, you know, that was sustainable. And so I made it. March 1st arrived. I got my last paper back. It was from a systematic theology course, hardest course I've ever taken. And I passed. And that morning I woke up 2 hours early. Now, I had two young kids at the time. I wasn't going to be sleeping in, but waking up at 5 was weird. And then a couple weeks later, 5 became 4, and then 2, and then 1. And then I found myself just kind of lying in bed feeling, if I say tingly, you know what I mean? Like just not sleeping. And then I began to have, I'm going to call it weirdness at my speaking dates. I was at a youth event, probably about 2 hours from me. I think it was 400 or 500 students had come from all kinds of different denoms for kind of an evening. And I'm in the middle, and I'm 6'6". You can't tell that from this, but I'm a big guy. And so I usually don't go onto the stage. I kind of walk across the front. And right in the middle of talking, it was like the world turned sideways. And the back of my mind kept speaking, and the front of my mind began kind of wondering, how do you gracefully pass out in front of people? Like, do I just fall over like a tree? Do I go down to one knee? Like, I've never had this before. And so I took a break. For the first time in 1,500 talks, I said to the pastor, I need 5 minutes. And I suddenly found myself with the smallest juice box ever seen. And a nurse is asking me if I'm diabetic. And I'm like, I don't know. Went home and went to my family doctor. And he said, Brett, you have anxiety. And I said, no, I speak on anxiety. And he said, no, you have anxiety. It was this weird kind of back and forth, and put me on some really simple medications. And I went home, and a few days later, I'm like, okay, I think I'm good. I was not. And I was touring just across from Detroit is the city of Windsor in Canada. And I was doing all the Catholic high schools. And on my second day, I found myself crying in my car at 8 a.m. Nothing's happening. And I'm weeping in my car. And in my head, I'm like, I'm not okay. And so went home, canceled the tour. More doctors. Now I have more specialists involved, sleep therapists, and the list goes on. And this kind of went this way for, I don't know, a couple more months. I think I'm better. Go onto the road, panic attack, you know, lock myself in a hotel for 2 days. I actually left one speaking event, like fight or flight. Like I fled. I drove away. Kind of picture like your podcast, like welcome Brett Allman. And I'm like off. Like that's, I just left.
Wow. Yeah.
But I didn't understand it. It was a new thing to me. I'd never had a panic attack before. And now I've had, I mean, I stopped counting in the 200 or 300 range, but it all ended. I'm going to call that my pre-breakdown. And I had a full breakdown. I was speaking at a camp, supposed to speak to some parents and then kind of have a bit of a week off as well. And coming out of a McDonald's, you know, when you come out of McDonald's, you have to walk through the drive-thru lane to get to your car. And so I was doing that, and I suddenly, everything went slow, and I'm like, I'm being hit by a car. And then I realized I'm not being hit by a car. I'm actually falling into a parked car. And my equilibrium was shot. My wife grabbed my arm like a blind person and walked me to the car. I didn't leave the cottage for the week. I didn't leave my house for 5 months and I didn't work for an entire year. And there's irony in that, you know, we're at the end of 2020 and I, 8 years later, still struggle with panic, still struggle with sleep issues, and still struggle with anxiety. And depression is one of those things that comes in and out, but it's become to me such an important topic because I saw how I was, and I say treated, kind of like, no, maybe that's the right word. I saw what people said to me as they came into my house, my pastors, my leaders, my friends. And it was kind of from those comments that I began this talk called The Walking Wounded. And it's kind of been probably one of my larger conversations. And like I now do mental health coaching and I call myself a mental health advocate. And so it's become one of those topics that I just think we desperately need to talk about, both about prevention and about care. Because it's both of those, it's and.
Yeah, and we're not very good, I don't think, as a church at really talking about this stuff. And even as a pastor, you know, I mean, being a pastor, I empathize with your friends or your pastors who come to your house to try to sit with you, to visit, to see how you're doing, to check in on you, and to really not be fully equipped to be able to help with the issue. Or even to know how to even address it as a friend, because what we want is for everything to be okay all the time. And we don't really want to have to, you know, we either want to fix it or we want it to not happen at all ever. And then whenever it does happen, we're like, well, okay, something's broke. I have to fix it, even as the pastor or the youth pastor or even the parent. And so that's where, you know, this conversation goes as a parent. How do I help my kids with mental health issues or with or even with anxiety or any of those kinds of things? How do I do that? Like, most of the time, all we want to do is fix it because it's very, very difficult. And you saying that this was however many years ago and you still are kind of, you know, in those, you know, it's not something that just comes or that just goes away overnight. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about. You know, what have you learned and how can we as parents help our kids who might be either on the verge of that or going through that for sure? How do we help? What are your comments on that?
I say often, and I know some people don't like this, but I say that we have a lot of well people telling unwell people what to do. And you use the word empathy, which I think is a really important word that we often forget about, because it's trying not to just fix people, but it's putting yourselves in their shoes and trying to understand what they're going through. And so for me, people would come through and sit across from me on a couch. And many of them to use the book of Job, became Job's friends. And they would say comments. Now, I do say this. They said what they thought was helpful, but without knowing it was the exact opposite. And so they would say, well, have you tried praying? Praying is great. But if someone has cancer and you sit in front of them and a woman has breast cancer, a guy has other whatever cancer, you don't say, have you tried praying? Kind of like, if you had prayed, you wouldn't therefore have cancer. No one would ever say that. But we say that with someone with mental health, kind of like, someone didn't pray enough and therefore God either is what, punishing them? Like, there's a weird conversation that goes with that. And then the person leaves and you're left going, maybe I didn't pray enough. And then other people would say, one guy said, well, have you tried running? And I'm like, well, I haven't left the house in 5 months. And he's like, but have you tried running? Because I guess for him, running was really great. And you know what, again, running is really, really good. So if we're to, let's just, whoever you are, if it's your kid and you're like, what do I do? I really believe that we need to view mental health in a, and I say holistic, and some people don't like that term, and that's okay. But it's not like if you have diabetes, you take insulin. It's not as clear cut. And so I think what we do is we view it in three different roads: the body, the mind, and the soul. Your issue might be physical, so go see a doctor. And I mean, we can go more into depth in the physical in a second, but like eat better, sleep more. There's lots of physical things. And the Bible is filled with physical analogies of running the good race and your body is the temple. And I'm a kinesiology major. So I lean towards that aspect. You know, I just posted a video today online about actually, I reposted one on like walking every day and how great walking is. But your issue might be physical. Your issue might be emotional, psychological, might be trauma-based, might be something that's gone on in your life and you need to get some counseling. And I say counseling from like a registered, you know, therapist, psychologist, psychotherapist. Get some strategies and how to deal with panic. You know, if I was to come and speak at your church or youth group, I would actually sit in a big wingback chair at the front. I've learned for me that if my body, when I'm standing, gets anxious, I feel dizzy. But if I sit in a chair, I can be dizzy all day. It doesn't matter. So I say it might be physical and it might be emotional. Now, language is so important here. I do not say it might be spiritual because it's unbelievably uncommon that the answer to mental health lies in our faith. But, and this is a huge but, like God says, you will have trouble, but says, I'll be with you in the trouble. So we build our faith because it's the foundation from which we journey through these journeys. But that does not mean to always be better, because not like we live in a fallen world and not everything is always good. And so I say body, mind, and soul. And I like that because it's so simple.
So the soul comes along the body and the mind, right? Like that's kind of what I'm hearing you say, is that it's not necessarily, oh, if you just get your faith better, then that's going to fix the problem. What it is your faith is going to help you journey along these other two paths as well to maybe not fix, not alleviate, but to help you on this journey of anxiety or mental health or what, you know, those problems that you're running in, your faith. And we're in Christmas time. This is one of the biggest lessons to me about Jesus is, and about Christmas this is God with us. God with us. Like whenever we think about any of the things that we're talking about, whenever I'm thinking about my kid who struggles with being at a new school, I think God with you in that. That doesn't make it 100% easier. That doesn't make it where it's not difficult, but it sure does help with the knowledge of knowing that Jesus is walking right alongside with me. And so it's not necessarily, like you said, it's not always just you need a spiritual quick fix, like pray more and things will be better. It's more of
But the truth is, we want you to pray more. And this is where I always say that I'm an and person. I'm not an or person. Like, it's not Jesus or medication. It might be medication. And I think it's just good to say medications might be needed. Like, that's another whole vein of conversation. Yeah. But like, medications might be needed. But I also think we don't go there first.
Right.
I put up a video recently just saying, like, here are six things to do before you go on medications. And so things like exercise and sleep. I mean, this is, again, part of the physical things of the body. Like, we need to sleep better and sleep more. And so, like, before someone heads into meds, when you're not doing well, go to bed earlier, you know, do sleep training, you know, get off your phones, like stop watching a video. Well, stop watching all videos except for this one, if you're watching it when you're going to sleep.
Right.
But like, you know, turn off light, just do good things, and then eat better. Like, if you're struggling with panic and anxiety, get rid of caffeine. I mean, caffeine gives you these highs and then these lows. And get rid of aspartame. Like, aspartame's in a lot of foods. And it like, you know, now pops or some of the sodas are changing, which, you know, some are stevia and some are different things. But get rid of aspartame and then eat healthier. Eat whole foods, right? Don't just eat boxed chicken fingers and fries. And daily exercise, you know, every day do something.
It is amazing how much the body and the taking care of your body does affect, you know, for some reason we think that like my physical body and my mind are two completely different things, but it's a connected being. It's like everything that I put into my mouth does affect the way that I think, and everything that I eat does affect the way that I act and the way that I feel. And so it is amazing to see how that just a simple change in diet can help whenever you're not feeling mentally all there. I was going to ask the question too, just about, so what do you do? Like, just help me understand as a parent, the difference between a major mental health issue and typical teenage, I'm going to say angst. That's probably might not be the right word, but you know what I mean? Like there's just, cause there's, you know, I mean, like there are some parents who probably are thinking, well, what do I do with my kid? Because they're just, there's all of these like mood swings and I'm over here going, well, that's kind of adolescence. Like that's just the way that it is. And so how do you know whenever it's slipping into something that's not a normal, and I know that that's the wrong word. Normal is probably not, true, but it's not a everybody goes through it kind of a thing.
So if you take anxiety on a continuum, doing well, and then like severe anxiety, like people with such bad social anxiety, they can't go to school or work, or you know, panic attacks and phobias and many other things. And then you take depression, doing okay, and then all the way through to people with like severe depressive disorders, you know, who don't shower, don't eat, don't leave the house, can't work and other things. In the middle is this continuum. It's like take anxiety. I was speaking, it was pre-COVID, I forget when, so it's at least 9 months, I guess. But I was speaking and on my phone, I got this alert and it said that there was, there was an incident at the Pickering nuclear station. So I live 7 kilometers from nuclear station. My parents live 3. And it said there was an incident. So I'm heading on to stage, kind of like, is my family dead? Like now it ended up being an error. Shouldn't have been sent out, but like, well, that's anxiety. I actually felt it in my heart. Is that clinical anxiety? No, but is it anxiety? Yes. Right now as parents, we worry about our kids. We worry about, you know, we talk a lot about mental health. And I do think one thing we need to address is that there are some positive things we've seen during COVID, especially with teenagers. An article in The Atlantic talked about how teens are doing okay during quarantine. And I mean, quarantine's different anywhere you are, anywhere in the world, but kids are sleeping more. You know, many kids go to bed. So I have a 17 and an almost 19. Now my daughter's at university, but my son goes to bed 1:30. And gets up at 11:30. And that's okay. School is now, a lot of it's mostly online, but like more sleep, more time with parents. Like I'm not on the road like I used to be doing tours. I'm home, my wife's home more, and less social media, which is weird, but there's nothing happening. There's nothing to see. TikTok is through the roof, but like just social media. But those things are, we're seeing some positive things, but life sucks. Let's just be honest. Like for everyone, there's just, everything's a bit worse. And so acknowledging that that's kind of the way it is something kind of we need to do these days. Just acknowledge that it's not perfect. But again, that's not clinical anxiety or clinical depression as well. I do think we need to watch our language. There's an article once that talked about how we use language appropriate for a psychiatrist's office in basic language back and forth. You know, if you today, you know, before, like a call like this, someone might say, oh, I have anxiety. Well, is that just apprehension? Is anxiety literally the word? Or if you have like a work party you have to go to and someone's like, you know, I have social anxiety. Well, maybe you're just a bit nervous. If a kid today has to go on Zoom or whatever other system and do a thing at school, well, maybe that's not anxiety. Nervousness is okay. And I just think we need to separate the language with those things, but we don't. We use, you know, someone has a bad day and posts online, oh, I'm so depressed. Really? Like, is that the right language? Because I would say it's actually the wrong language. But yeah, to go back to your original question.
So I think that's an important point, because I think that teaching our kids how to properly identify what their emotions are is going to help them whenever they really are experiencing anxiety. If my kid's like, oh, well, I've got this presentation I have to do in class today, and it just gives me anxiety to get up in front of class, that's probably not what we would call anxiety. But if they understand, yeah, and I'm really kind of nervous about it, then that helps me as a parent. It sends me the right signals. So training them to use the proper terminology might be a good start to being able to have that dialogue, which is something that I think is extremely important anyway with kids and with parents, is to be able to talk about what you're going through. And so if you really do feel like you are anxious and you're like, there is something going on, like you and your wife, whenever you tell the story about the McDonald's, if you can't tell her what you're feeling inside, then she can't help you. And so if I can't open up those lanes of communication with my own kids to be able to actually really understand what they're going through, then they're not going to be able to communicate to me, you know, Dad, something's not right here. I really need help with this thing because it's more than what I usually feel whenever I have to get up in front of people. And so I think maybe that's kind of what you were talking about.
I want to come to that in 1 second, but there's one more statement I want to say, which is the question of how do you know when you've crossed the line, which is a really important question. And I just say, if you think you have, if you think your kid has, they probably have. Meaning we as parents know our kids, we know each other. And so if you think, men ask me this a lot when I do like a talk for men, they're like, do you think I have anxiety? Well, no one's walking up to me who's doing well and says, do you think I have anxiety? Like, you must have some physiological feelings in you. If you think, does my kid have anxiety? It must be more than just, I was nervous to do an English presentation. If that is ongoing, nervous to go out, nervous to be with friends, maybe there is something. Now, to go back to your point, you were just saying, we need to have a relationship with our kid to even speak on these things. And that's what I think is something we often forget. I did a talk on mental health about 3 years ago, finished. And after a talk, people come and chat. And a guy said to me, hey, can I ask you a question? I'm like, sure. He said, Brett, how do I talk to my daughter about sex? Great question. And I went to reply and he interrupted me and he said, oh, wait, by the way, just so you know, she hates me. And I said, what? And he said, oh, she hates me. And I'm like, what do you mean she hates you? He said, oh, Brett, forget about that. How do I talk to her about sex? I'm like, forget about sex. What do you mean she hates you? Because that's everything. If you don't have a relationship with your kid, you will not be speaking truth into their life. This is where other leaders, other adults, youth pastors, coaches, and other people will have to come in. Like, you need a relationship with your kid. And that's why, like, the first 6 chapters in my book are really talking about the idea of how do we have good, rich communication? How do you spend time with your kids? How does discipline not divide? How does discipline teach? Which parenting styles help us? Like, there's the orange curriculum, which some churches use, have this great chart. It talks about a positional and relational influence. So when you have a baby, positional influence is what you have, and it goes down. And then, like, I have an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old. I don't have much positional influence. Now, I can say, you're in my house, but, like, that's just destroying relationship. Like, if they're with me somewhere and I'm like, I want to leave, they'll be like, okay, I'm going to stay. I'll see you later. Then you have relational influence, which begins at nothing and then increases. And that relational influence is what you want. It's when your kid comes to you and is willing to say, I don't feel good. More than just, I'm sick. Like, but there's something, you know, like I can't breathe. You want them to be able to come to you. And if we always, and I think sometimes we, remember the band in the 1990s, REM? They had the song Shiny Happy People. I think sometimes that's what we want to be. We want to, you know, we're Christians. We have Jesus. We know everything's good. It's like, well, we might have Jesus, but everything's not good. There are things we might, you know, our kid might have anxiety. There might be other disorders. And it's okay for our kid to come to us and say, mom or dad or whatever, I'm struggling. And we need to listen. Because too often I hear from kids and they say this, I told my dad I'm struggling with anxiety. And they just said, no, you're fine. Well, what does that do to a relationship when you say, you know, hey, to my parent, I'm struggling and we don't support them. Now, could it be, someone always says, could it just be like they're just saying it? Maybe, but let's find that out. Like, let's walk down that path. And if you have a good relationship with your kid, you'll kind of know whether they're like, I don't think most kids are just saying those things for the sake of it, but
yeah, we need a relationship. And a lot of us don't want to hear it. A lot of the parents don't, we don't want to admit it, that my kid might be struggling. Cause you know, Johnny's a good boy and I know he's just going through something and it also reflects on us and it hurts us. Like not even like our kids aren't trying to hurt us, but it does kind of, oh man. Cause we want everything to be okay. We want everything to be fixed. And even as a Christian, we want everything to be perfect instead of, like we just said, you know, Jesus, God with us. Instead of having just God with us, we want God with us so everything is perfect and dandy and fine. And just a couple of, you know, videos ago and podcasts ago, I've been harping on this. I feel like it just is a recurring theme that, you know, it's okay to not be okay. And the growth is in the struggle, and the things that we are struggling with are times for God to show up in ways that he's never shown up before. And so we need to look at that as an opportunity for growth, even though in that moment it really, 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 like you said, it really hurts and it really is difficult. You know, pandemic, nobody wants pandemic, but man, there are a lot of growth opportunities in a pandemic. And so I think
I love that quota. I was going to say, I love that quote, it's okay to not be okay. We often use, I think it's Perry Noble who uses, then he says, but it's not okay to stay that way. And I actually challenge that a little bit in that, you know what, if you're just having a bit of anxiety or you feel a bit of depression, like if you're beginning in that conversation, I think we have a responsibility to do the best we can to exercise and sleep well and diet and, you know, have counseling and faith and all these things. But to say to someone who has schizophrenia or bipolar or ADHD, it's not okay to stay that way. Like, mental health is a big, big kind of conversation. And so sometimes we say that simple line, but not everyone has the option of just not being that way. And so it's just important, I think, we challenge sometimes some of the language that we use.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. Like I said, we do want a quick fix. We do want our kids to be okay. And I believe that that's okay also. Like, parents, yeah, you should want your kids to be okay. You should want your kids to be able to be functioning and be able to, you know, do the things that they need to do. But we also have to remember, like you just said, that it's not always gonna just be okay. Especially overnight. Sometimes it takes work, and sometimes it does take a diet change. And those, even changing the things in your diet and what you eat, that takes time. And then changing your exercise habits, that takes time. You can't just be like, well, I went for a run and it didn't work. you know, like, and now everything should be fine. I should be feeling great. Like, I feel worse after a run because I don't do it enough, right? But that's, you know, we can't just expect, well, you know, we take these two tips that Brett writes in his book or says in a talk, and we tried it one time, and then all of my kids should be fine. It just doesn't work like that.
Well, another interesting thing about parenting, when we're talking about parenting as a whole, is over-parenting is actually part of this conversation with mental health. You know, in the mid-1990s, we switched. It was an author named Julie Lithcott-Hames. She wrote a book called How to Raise an Adult. She has a great TED Talk as well. But she said that in the 90s, we stopped preparing our kids for life and we began protecting them from life. And if you let that line sink in, we've now created an anxious generation. There's a book called iGen. I don't know if you ever read that before. I-G-E-N. It's just statistics talking about, there's one girl in grade 12 who can only go to the mall with her mom, and then she can only be away from her mom for 30 minutes at a time at the mall. And so these are things that when we overfunction as parents, our kids underfunction. And when they underfunction, we rob them of the preparation they need in life. Like, my daughter just headed off to university. She is away from home. I speak to her daily. We FaceTime and do things, but unlike my son, who I see and I'll see after we record this and things, she's away. She better be prepared how to deal with when she doesn't feel good, if she has a bit of anxiety, if she, you know, how to deal with exams and preparation and boys and pornography and alcohol. If we just protect our kids all the way through, they don't know how to deal with things. They head off to university or other things, and they don't even know the basics. I did a series recently called Things Your Kids Should Learn Before They're 18, like how to use public transit, how to do their laundry, how to cook, how to talk to adults. And this is where we take a role, you know, from the moment your kids are young, you know, if they are able to talk on the phone to grandma, grandpa, or someone, or if they have a coach, they need to cancel, you know, they can't go to, you know, soccer practice because they have a test the next day, they can be the ones who talk on the phone. Like, the more we encourage our kids and build them up, the more resilient they'll be. Like, resiliency is like that ball that gets pushed in and it pops back up. And too many kids, it pops and it's just, they get stuck. And so I think we play a role as like our parenting affects mental health as well, amongst many other things. But that's one I see big time today.
So what do you think are some of the other things that we can do as parents? I mean, I'm hearing a lot of like, you know, hey, let's be okay with the struggle. Let's see if we can tweak some of the health things that we do as far as what we eat and how much exercise we get. Having that right relationship with our kids so that they will come to us whenever they feel something's off, and then actually responding to that instead of just blowing it off. What's maybe one or two other things? We're kind of coming up on the time here, but I want to squeeze as much out of you as we can with this question. But what other things can we do as parents?
I think one thing, like counseling, is an interesting thing. And so my kids have known since they were young, if they ever need help with something, it's okay to go see a counselor for an appointment or two. And counseling doesn't have to be you're here two times a week for the next 15 years. Like you can go see. So if one of my kids has an issue just with friends or with other like they can use another adult like this, a counselor, to go get some tips and tricks, just ways that they can learn. Even my daughter at university recently found out she had free counseling and booked a few appointments just to see how she can be better. Our language and how we speak about counseling, like my kids know I've been for counseling and they know it's okay to do that. So in how we speak about things, I was at a talk once and a kid wrote me, I actually spoke on pornography for a Sunday morning service, like crazy unorthodox. I'm driving home and a kid wrote me a letter. He said, "Hey Brett, if I ever struggle with porn, can I talk with you?" I wrote back and said, "Sure. Why won't you talk to your dad? Your dad's one of the pastors." And he said, "Well, my dad got in the car after your talk." And this is what he literally said. So he said, "It's me, my mom, and I have two brothers and sisters, all teens." He said, "My dad got in the car and said, 'What kind of stupid person gets addicted to pornography?'" And the kid said to me in the email, "My dad told me in that moment, he's not a safe person to talk to about anything, .. ever. Like, talk about your influence." Like, we want that special attachment with our kids, that our kids know when they go out into life, like Gordon Neufeld, Leonard Sachs talk about this in all their books, like attachment parenting, this rich relationship that our kids can come and speak to us about anything. But if our language to someone else who's addicted to porn or a young teenager gets pregnant is nothing but judgment, our kids will not speak to us. And so how we live, how we speak to each other as spouses, how we deal with, you know, discourse in our homes, or even like all these things play into our role with our kids and what they will think. And I think we take leadership in teaching our kids how to cook, how to do laundry, how to exercise. When my kids became grade 7 and 8, we joined a gym health club together, and so we get family time where we're teaching them how exercise is important. But all of these things take our leadership. And I just think we as parents got to look for any chance we can to grow closer to our kids, build into them body, mind, and soul in different ways. I mean, the soul one right now, usually the soul one is the one we do really well because we're in church. But for many of our churches that are not, we're all digital. The statistics are terrifying. Families who do nothing, like they're not connecting with their pastor, which that's another conversation. Many times they didn't anyways. They're 15, their pastor's 58. You know, their sermons connect with, I'm 49, more people my age or something. But, you know, find a way, you know, on a Sunday, maybe you and your wife do your church service together, but you do it, like we've been doing different voices for my kids throughout this season, just trying to give them different voices from all around the world of great speakers. But I guess the point with that is leadership in body, mind, and soul. Teaching. I always say teach, don't tell. How can we teach our kids these things to build and equip them so that when life hits them, they'll be okay? And if they're not, we're there for them to help them, to build them back up.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that you just said, you know, just kind of the words that pop into my brain whenever you speak like that is, you know, it's being proactive. It's not just, you know, letting life take us where it's going to be and then boom, before you know it, they're off in the university. I was just listening to the radio this morning, and they were talking about these adults who have never had to put air in their tires of their car, or they don't know how. And I was thinking, man, I probably need to start, you know, teaching my kids how to put the air in the tires of their car. And my oldest is 15, so it's not like he's driving around or anything, but I don't want him to be 45 years old and not know how to put the air in. I mean, he's a smart kid and there's YouTube, so, you know, he's going to figure it out. But just to give them opportunities and be proactive in those things. And maybe even ask, you know, hey, which church service, if we're online, everybody's online and you're not connecting, which speaker would you like to listen to? Here, I got three that I think might appeal to you, and give them the opportunity to do, to figure it out and to listen to it. And obviously we're right there alongside with them and can help them with those decisions. It's not like my kid has a catalog of pastors that he wants to listen to, but, you know, at least giving them that option and opportunity to be able to, you know, kind of say those things. And I think too often we are reactive as parents and not proactive. And so I think that's kind of what I've heard you kind of been telling us in this throughout this whole podcast. You know, let's think of these ways to walk alongside our kids and not just push them out and give them those, you know, I can't imagine my son or my daughter not wanting to talk to us about the important issues of life. But I can imagine me doing something stupid and saying something dumb that would push them away unintentionally. Like, no parent wants to do that. I'm sure the story you tell about the pornography and the young person that writes you a letter and all of that, that father never intended for his kid to not be able to speak to him about that issue. But unintentionally, the things that we say are pushing them away.
That father heard me speak like this on a podcast, and he wrote me and he said, "Is that me?" And I just said, "You're going to have to talk to your kids." And he wrote me, he had a, like, talk about a healing moment in a family when he had to sit down. And he said, "I just cried in front of my family and said, I am so sorry." And it was a very cathartic healing moment for all of them. And I think, like, no matter if we've made errors, we can move in the right direction. But it's, you have to acknowledge that. We might need to go to a kid and say, "I'm really sorry," and we can move forward. But it's acknowledging that. You, when we're talking about prevention, I love the quote by Frederick Douglass, who says, "It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." And I would say men and women. It's a powerful kind of simple line of, like, it's easier to talk to our kids about pornography, media awareness, dating, and all these other things, mental health, you know, what it's like to live a healthy and health and wellness, right? How do we have a good life than to deal with the unwell person, the addicted teenager, you know, all those other things later in life?
Yeah, it might be easier, but it's still hard. And so, yes. And so that's why, you know, guys like you and I kind of exist to try to come alongside parents and try to help them think through these things, have these conversations, talk about these things. And so I really appreciate your ministry. I appreciate what you're doing, your podcast, your YouTube channel, all that stuff, your books that you've written. So thanks so much for being here with us. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. Let me just say one line to that. One thing I love is Home Depot. Their byline is, "You can do it, we can help." And I really like that. Like, you know, for anyone listening, it's like, oh, you know, Dennis, Brett, like my kid or me, like, you can do it. You can do it, but we can help as leaders, as pastors, as authors, YouTubers. There's so many places for help. People can find me on my website. It's just my name, brettallman.com. And everything I do comes off that. And my social media is all at the top. One thing I challenge parents always to do is, when you find any author or anyone who you like even you and I met recently, I went right to your face. Like, I liked you on Facebook. Like, I find someone and I like them on every social media platform, because when I go on, like, when we finish this, I may open up my iPad and go into social media. I don't just want pictures of dinners and dogs and other things. I want someone talking about mental health or sexuality or parenting or a great sermon. Like, and so I like ongoing, really good content. It's kind of the pushing against the social dilemma, right? By having differing voices that we're hearing in our lives. But everything comes off my website, and you can find my YouTube channel, and my book is on Amazon, and everything else is all off there.
Yeah, and it's definitely worth checking out. I can't wait to read portions of the book, because there's no way I have time to read all of it, but maybe I'll get to some of it. So really appreciate your time. I am so thankful for your ministry, like I said, and your life, and I'm glad that God is using you in these arenas. So thanks for being here with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on, Dennis. Appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. Episode's over. I sure hope you enjoyed that podcast and that interview. And if you did, if it brought you value, please be sure to leave a review or like this on YouTube. If you've watched this far, if you're listening to it on a podcast player, make sure you leave a review. That would be super helpful. And until the next time, we hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful time. And we will talk to you next time.